the original from his writing, from his handwriting, and did the very first ones, you know, where he could, you know, first started out, and then corrected it, and all that part, you know, that I do.
So you did the preliminary type.
I did that right from his handwriting.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about the doctor being on the island and the fact that a baby was born.
Yeah, this winter, they aren't equipped at this medical center to deliver babies, but they used to. The doctor who was here when we first came up here, Dr. Christie, delivered a lot of babies. Mm-hmm. And just by the grace of God that nothing terrible happened. Because they had no equipment, no, you know, some things are complicated. They have unusual things that happen. They don't have instruments or anything to, you know, like a hospital does. But he somehow was able to get by. But when he left and the doctor who followed him, who became a very close friend of ours, was here for 5 years, a very, very good doctor just said, threw up his hands and said, no way am I going to deliver any babies, this, you know, equipment, you know, and all these lawsuits now and everything. And we said, it's dangerous for the baby, for the people, for everybody. He said, no way. So they just, you know, went across when it was time. But last winter we had a case of bad weather and they couldn't fly her off. And so there's a doctor retired here who's not practicing, but he lives down at the south end of the island. He was a family practice man in Lansing, Dr. Lang, a very fine doctor. And they called him, and so he came up, and finally the doctor did come over from Charlotte, was able to fly in. But anyway, it was a very successful delivery, and so now the people, you know, always bragged about they were Native Islanders born on Beaver Island, and so now they can't do that because, for the most part, they have to either go to Petoskey or Charlevoix Hospital. Mm-hmm. It's just not safe, you know.
So you have a 1989 Native.
We do have, yes, we do have one more Native. And it could happen again, but we have no doctor permanently as a nurse practitioner who's very competent, you know, for the minor things, but he is quite knowledgeable and able to determine, you know, when you do need to fly off, and can just insist that you go, which is important because you don't always know that if you're that sick yourself. But it's kind of scary not to have a doctor.
You go downstate for your services.
I go to Petoskey to Burns Queenan.
I remember the last time I saw Doyle, I don't know why, I'd gone probably to see someone in the St. Lawrence Hospital, mm-hmm. I think it was St. Lawrence or Sparrow, I've forgotten which one now, mm-hmm. Memory is so fragile,
yes,
and you came by and it was a very difficult time there for a member of your family, as I remember. Someone was very ill and you'd come down to be there.
No, I can't recall.
I suppose it was one of Cora Hunt's sisters at that time.
It might have been. It was Alma, I think. I think so.
I think
that we went down to see her, and then we wondered about staying because we knew she was very close to death. But we did come home, and it was just a few days later that she died, so we went back again.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you're
remember,
right.
I remember that.
Greeting you there and having a visit, and in a few minutes you came along.
I remember that now. Okay. That was Sparrow, I think. Yes.
I noticed on the wall you have a painting that says Fitzpatrick, that's Doyle's.
Yes, all of them are. This one, and the little one, and that one over the organ. Those are all his.
Oh, he was an accomplished painter.
Yes, he could have been very good. He loved to paint, and he did all these when we were still in Lansing, and painted quite very rapidly. I was amazed at how fast he could paint and just come up with it. And I do have a lot of little sketches that he did, you know, for future paintings. And then he took a lot of them from my slides that I took, because I am a photographer. And he would put the slides on and then sketch from those and did a lot of them that way. But he did all this in Lansing. He never painted when he was up here. He just didn't seem to. All of a sudden, he just didn't seem to do it. And he planned to, because I have about 6 boxes of canvases that he purchased and brought up here planning to paint. And you can't believe all the artist supplies of brushes and paints. And I had a palette and easel and all of these things to do painting, but all of a sudden just seemed to not be interested at all in doing it. Mm-hmm. And I had so hoped he would.
And now the sun is boiling through, look.
Yes.
The sun is boiling through, and look at this gorgeous light that floods this whole house. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And perfect light for an artist.
Right.
Well, he
always said, well, if I had a certain room, a studio room, and I could leave everything in there and I wouldn't have to put it away and I could just go down there when I wanted. And I think that was the whole thing. He didn't really have the right light. He needed the north light, actually, and didn't really have the right place to do it.
Somehow he just set that aside from his life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm impressed, though, with the quality of his artwork.
Yes. And then there's one in your room of this old house on Barney's Lake, which is a beautiful house.
Oh, I noticed that immediately.
Uh-huh. Yes. And I have a lot of sketches of things that he had planned to do.
He's got all the mood of the old building and its environment.
And then one in the kitchen is, too. It's a different view of it. Like when it had enormous lilac bushes. Ah, it was fantastic, but it burned down 4th of July about 5-6 years ago. The house just burned. So whether someone set it or camping, you know, and the fire got out of hand. Mm-hmm. But I have happened to have quite a few pictures of it that I had taken with the lilacs in bloom, and I've sold many, many of that.
Mm.
Seemed to be one of the favorites. And now that area is the family that owned this property have donated to the Conservancy, Michigan Conservancy. So they have a plaque up there now, or a sign up there.
How do you spell that name? Did I hear it correctly?
The O'Donnell family, Barney O'Donnell. The lake is Barney's Lake, and this is the family of Barney O'Donnell, the heirs to this property. They fought over it for years, didn't know what to do with it, couldn't agree. There were more heirs every year, you know, more family increasing and everything. So they decided that there wouldn't be anything left of it, time the lawyers' fees and everything were taken out. And finally, some of the descendants, the last year or so, agreed that this would be the thing to do. Give it to the Conservancy, and this will all be kept intact. There's orchards back, apple trees. It's a beautiful area. And then this hill and this house that was up there, and it looked over this little lake. But it was a tragedy that the house burned, but it would have fallen down eventually because they never fixed it up. Couldn't agree on what to do with it, so they just... Somebody decided it, I guess, because it probably was upset, you know, either from a campfire and the fire blowing, or somebody deliberately torching it, just thinking it was an old house.
Mm-hmm.
But it was beautiful, and the lilacs, you know, made it special.
Lilacs survive for centuries.
They're still there. They're still there. They didn't burn. But there are many interesting... tales and things about the island too, you know, all special places. But now there's a lot of development. Some of the areas that you never, when we first came up here, that we always said, oh, how beautiful these are. Isn't it great that the way the terrain is, I'll never be able to develop this.
Oh, of course, never.
No, never. And of course, here they are now, you know, fantastic houses and all this gorgeous area.
You say that the new, large, very prosperous, prosperity-produced houses are on the west side?
On the west side of the island, and there's one area, it was called Bonner's Bluff, and it was a real high, a steep bluff that went down this little road that was very treacherous to go down, although we did go down there once with our blazer and wondered even then if we were going to make it. But it was beautiful. And then you got down to this gorgeous beach. Nothing there. You never saw anybody. You could walk along there. And it was just a special place. Now it's all been a modern road put in there. All these places are platted out and houses in there. And they're beautiful, but, you know, it's just entirely different, like another world. And every spot like that now is developed, it seems like. And there's hardly any undeveloped beachfront anymore.
And this has all happened within the 14 years you've been here?
Yes, within the last probably 5 to 7 at the most. Yes.
And what's the nature of the developers? Are they large outstate developers, or are they local?
Some are local, have capitalized on it, actually, you know, sold the lots, and, you know, not developed it themselves, but sold the lots, and then the people building. But there's one or two on the island now who are very good builders, and they do a good job, but it's kind of, I think maybe that's why it's sort of losing its charm for me, because of the, you know, the trend now and the way it's going. When I remember all the beauty of it, unspoiled, and how gorgeous it was, all these areas, and you could walk all these beaches and never see a soul, or be very rare if you would ever. And you felt free that you could go down there and walk and take pictures. Now, people that do have any places along there, a lot of them just got posted, keep out, private. You know, it's just altogether different.
Change.
Mm-hmm.
Well, change, you've been away from Lansing for 14 years, but when you go back, what are the things that stand out first as change?
Oh, the just everything's so different about Lansing. The roads, the superhighways, all the roads going in and out, all the development, all the, I don't know, it just doesn't even look like Lansing to me when I get in the downtown area and the approaches to the city. And it's just so totally different. Some of the areas, of course, we lived on the east side, and I go back there around Frandor area is still pretty much like it was. It hasn't developed, that part of it, and it's easy to find my way around, but some parts of it are just thoroughly confused about where I am, you know, until I finally find a landmark or a skyline that tells me the general area that I am. It's much different. And I think living there would be a lot more difficult than it used to be. But I still have a feeling that it's home. I mean, I always think about it as, you know, that was my home, and for a good many years, you know, I really always think Lansing is a special place. But I go back and visit my friend, you know, lived across the street from us, and we lived in Lansing, and I stay with her whenever I go down there, and it seems like I'm home there more than any place I go anywhere now, because it was, you know, we had a lot of good times together, and being across the street from where I lived, it seems, that area seems to be more natural.
You sold the home that?
Yes, we sold it. Our daughter bought it, and then she only lived in about a year, and then she sold it, so. So I think several people lived in it since then. But some of the one neighbor I saw last time I was down there still lives there, and I was glad to see her. So a few people, but most of them are different, have changed.
The neighborhood's changed too.
Yes, one or two that are still living there that were there when I lived there, but not many.
I wonder what you think the future might be for the community with these changes taking place. What do you think the future of the town is going to be?
Up here, you mean up here?
Of Lansing.
Of Lansing. Oh, I don't know. I just think it's still. I think it's still developing a lot, growing a lot. I still think it's a good town, but it frightens me because of the crime. You know, we really didn't have that much. When you had a murder or a shooting or something, it was an exception and a very unusual thing. But now it's common, just like all cities. And that part of it, I'm you know, frightened of. I would be afraid to go back there and live, probably. From that standpoint, but people that are there, you know, seem to accept it and just, you know, get along all right. But right now, the way it is up here, and you don't have anything like that to put up with, you're safe. And I never lock my door in the summertime. I go out all day long and I'm gone. We never take the keys out of our car, leave it on the street anywhere, just leave your keys in the ignition or in the garage overnight. Never worry about it. I have to watch myself when I'm on the mainland, any place that I don't leave my keys in the car, and that you keep your doors locked, because here you just don't have to worry about those things. But, you know, it's much different in any kind of a city. And even in Petoskey and Charlevoix now, the crime has come to the northern cities too. They have a lot more problems than they used to have a few years ago. So it's anywhere, but.
You said you had about 350 in the winter, and that population probably doubles in the summer?
In the summer, we have probably 2,000-3,000 people. Mm-hmm. There are a lot more cottages and people here than you realize. And then, of course, an awful lot of tourists who come, you know, like just for the day or for the week or 2 weeks, and an awful lot of people. Well, our tourists who've been coming here for many years come back. They just come back year after year and rent places. They speak for them. Like if they're here in August this year, before they leave, they arrange for getting it next year in August or mm-hmm. July or whenever. So that's a kind of a thing that just goes on. Mm-hmm. A lot of people come over here with the idea that they can just come over and just get any place to stay, but that's not true because you'd really be taking a chance.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And there aren't that many, because several of the motels that were near me down here are now condominiums, and they have sold them, and people own them, and they're kind of the condominium thing, and they come up, although they do rent, sub-rent them or sublet them, but so this is, you know, this has happened. And several of them. So there are only actually about two that are strictly motels as such, two or three.
Mm-hmm. Planning and zoning is such an important part of the Ingham County and the greater capital region. What kind of zoning do we have up here?
Well, it's been kind of a hit and miss kind of thing, now the last few years are more strict about it, but it seemed to be before they could get any kind of a variance, anybody could, you know, they had rules and laws and zoning ordinances, but anybody could get a variance for anything they wanted. But it's a little more strict now. They're getting, you know, with it more. In the last few years, they've kind of eliminated anything around the harbor, anything more commercial going in, trying to keep it the way it is, and people want it that way. They did a big survey a couple years ago on this whole thing, and have a property owners group organized to try and see that anything undesirable is not going to be allowed to come in here, like the developments. And several were in the wind, but it's kind of died down now temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
And the zoning is a little more, I think, enforced a little more. And they're getting more younger people and different people on the zoning boards, and I think maybe better qualified people than they had before. There were a lot of people that would just go, you know, were yes man, and you scratch an eye back and I'll scratch yours, and I owe you and you owe me, and so, okay, we'll put this through for you, and then now I've got a thing coming up, and let's see if you can work this out, you know. But now it's getting to be a little more that they're more concerned with the overall good of the island and the, you know, future of how it's planted out.
Mm-hmm. When we flew in this morning, even though it was gray and overcast, I was well aware of the excavation for gravel or stone, the mining that I saw here on the island, and then the looked like the dump.
Oh, the dump has been a big problem. We've been having a real problem with the dump. It's June 15th, I think, was the deadline for the time that you could dump anything in there free and that you could just throw anything in there.
So anything?
Just about anything, like lumber or old furniture or whatever, you know. And it was bulldozed over and then other sections. But the state of Michigan really got on them about it. And the DNR, which has been coming up for a long time, and the people here have been negligent, the supervisors of the townships, and doing anything really, have had a lot of warning, but they have just put it off till the crisis has been this year. So we're recycling, and they're going to have a transfer station. And it was going to be just capped shortly, but now they've extended it for a little while, gotten a grant from the state so that they have a few more, about another month, that you can still take some big items out there, because a lot of the summer people didn't have a chance to come up here and clean out things like old metal or old things they wanted to dispose of. But I took a lot of advantage of it and got rid of a lot of old lumber and things that I knew I wasn't going to use and just took it out there. And we had a joke about, you know, all these things that were sitting out around, people go out there to take something, then they'd look around, they'd see something else that they decided they might want, they'd take home. So it was a kind of a
flea market.
Yes. But they are getting into recycling now for the glass and plastics and a lot of things. But eventually it's going to have to be taken on barges and over to Charlevoix, where they do have an approved landfill. And that's going to be very costly. And hopefully the state's going to help somewhat, but it's going to be another burden, tax burden on people.
The city council in Lansing has just had a very controversial decision about the city taking over providing recycling mm-hmm, services. Mm-hmm. And some people were against that and being a city-sponsored activity and wanted it to be in the private sector. And but the council has moved forward on that now, so with a vote from the people. So and it is going to be very expensive, mm-hmm. but I think people are prepared to pay for this.
Yes,
now.
Yes, I think they realize they have to.
But that was a strange, to me it was a little shock to fly into this island, which in part presents a pristine view from the air, and then all of a sudden this soar as we came into the airport.
It's terrible. It's been a bone of contention with me for many years. I hated to go out there, what you have to do, but I've always thought how awful it was, you know, that they had it. And there was a lot of opposition even now when they realize this has to be, of people saying they thought there would be some other spot on the island where they could still have a landfill, but the state and the DNR said it absolutely is not. Well, it actually all came to a head when they felt that maybe there was groundwater contamination mm-hmm. From the dump, you know, and from all this plastics and all these things, and so they really got on them about it. And now the people are more or less getting used to it, and we do have, you know, recycling going on. And then they voted at millage just recently for money for the transfer station and for whatever they have to do about getting it over there, which will be costly. So I guess they reconciled the fact this has got to be, you know, all over the country the people are going to have to realize this. And you just pointed it out every day more and more, you know, the soil crisis and everything, and how negligent we've been during the last few years about that, not making any effort to conserve or save or to explore new, you know, channels and new sources of, and it's still bushes riding around in his powerboat and all that stuff. It's just kind of scary. But gasoline prices went up within about a week's time on the island, and so did fuel oil. So I'm not looking forward to that, which I will have to do, you know, about filling my oil tank. But what can you do if I'm here at all in the winter? Why, I've got to, you know, got to have it warm. So it's always expensive, but it's going to be more expensive. But the dump is a very, it's very, very unsightly. And the awful part is that part of the land nearby and back of that, there are some beautiful trees and actually pretty land near it. So it always seemed to me like it was a terrible waste of, you know, of a pretty land that they had this dump, you know, right in that spot. I think they did actually purchase additional land from somebody that owned it, you know, for expanding it. So if they did, why, that's been money down the drain. But it was a very pretty area back in, some apple trees and kind of sandy, kind of little small dunes. It just seemed too bad to have it there.
And you mentioned the water supply. The ground, the water level is much reduced.
Yes.
And people are digging new wells and
yes.
deeper depth.
Right. Yes, the water table's down.
At the same time that you're getting development and more people.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. And they even talked about the survey that they did about a central water system and a central sewage system that, you know, that this may eventually come up. If that happens, it'll be prohibitive, you know, practically to live here because it'll be so costly. So if I haven't decided before then what I'm going to do, that probably will determine it because that will be very difficult. Because everybody has their own well and their own septic system, you know, and their own drain fields and all that. So it's a lot to think about. But to keep developing, having more houses, and if they do have any kind of development nearby, they will have to go to some central system. And they're not equipped for anything like that, you know, at the present. It's just, but it's growing, you know, the island's growing, the population's growing. One thing about it, most of the homes, all of their winterized and everything, the people are just mostly summer residents because most of them are still working, their doctors or their lawyers or their, you know, professional people. And we did have one enormous, very unusual home and a very interesting story that would take me on and on and on if I told you about it. But this home was built over on the west side and it was a very gorgeous, a beautiful thing. They call it the castle. And it's, I don't know how many rooms are in it, but 30-some rooms, I guess, and this man came in here from Minneapolis and started building this, and it's very, nobody could believe it unless they would see it, that would be in Beaver Island. But he turned out to be a con man, actually, and had borrowed a lot of money from this bank in Minneapolis that his wife was, family was connected with, and so they backed him, and he really didn't have a cent, but the whole thing was unbelievable. And finally, after they just left it, stood unfinished for about 3 years and was starting to deteriorate, actually, because it wasn't all finished and some of the outside wasn't done, and finally someone did buy it on the market for a very a little over $100,000, which was a steal for what was involved there. And this couple from Michigan State, and she, I believe, was the dean of women, or had some very important job, or head of a department or something. And they were going ahead and finishing this, but it turns out that since this happened, they are since divorcing, and so the woman is ending up with this huge place all herself and finishing it off. I have no idea how much it would cost for the finishing of it, but it's a very unusual house. And you never expect to see anything like it and be around. I wish we could go down there and could show it to you, but they're still working on it and don't know if she's there or not or how it is, but it's remarkable. And to think he ended up being con artist, and one of my friends told me recently he is in jail right now. They finally caught up with him for some of this bad, you know, bad notes and bad debts and everything that he was pulling. So it has, I don't know, it was too good to be true, you know, all of this tale about that he was telling about this place. Mm-hmm. But he, the way it ended up, a lot of people on the island had done work, had contracted out, and stonework and a lot of other work and heating and some of the things and hadn't been paid. But finally, I guess they did, you know, so they were all paid off in the end, but they were kind of worried about this.
Weren't even paid for labor.
Mm-hmm, right, and labor and material.
What a story.
Yes, but it's a very unusual house. We all wondered what he was really going to do there and what kind of an operation he was running and what it was all about. He was going to have, he had a wall kind of up around the outside, a stone wall, and he was going to have an electronic system, you know, like with the gates and security and everything. So we wondered what he really, you know, why he needed this and what he really was up to. If he had some kind of, if it was drugs or something that he was going to be doing, you know, that was you know, kind of questionable.
A compound of that kind on Beaver Island, it didn't quite fit.
Not that many houses or all that many rooms, you know, that practically had a house within a house and a guest house besides, and all these things were just too much and didn't have that big a family. So he evidently just pulled these kind of deals, and was known. I don't know why they didn't know that when they loaned him the money, but apparently they didn't. It was a talk of the island for a long while, but he did give a lot of people work, you know, for quite a while.
Yes, Helen is out interviewing George Egbert. Yeah, well, that's a fascinating story. That'll become part of the Beaver Island folklore.
It will. Yeah.
Story of that.
Yeah, he. I don't know. They were saying that they wondered if he was connected with drugs or something, or what the tie-in was. But some people that live next door to him in a very beautiful house. The man told me the other day, he said, I understand that they've got him in jail, but apparently he had fled the country and they've been looking for him for a long time. He was just, you know, where they couldn't find him, but apparently somehow or other they did catch up with him, so. Strange. But, oh, so many rooms in the house, but this woman's spending a fortune on it, and she's got a special fellow who's very talented that does carpentry work and the finished work, and he's doing beautiful work there. I'd sure like to see that when it's all done. I've been through it, you know, when they're still working on it and it's still far from finished, but it would be something to see when it's all complete. Very unusual.
It's a far cry from the Protar House and other things.
I can remember when we first came up here, and there was a man who lived down south end of the island, a real nice man, and he had a place down there. And he said, you know, he said, I'm going back. He said, I've got a farm near Lansing, a lot of land, and he set us out. What did he tell me? Was it near Grand Ledger? There's a Grand Ledger, Portland or somewhere in there, and he says, I'm going back there and I'm just going to build the house out in there. And he says, the island's getting ruined. He said, there's too many people, too much building, too much exploitation. He said, it's not like it used to be. He said, I'm going to go back. He said, I don't like what's happening to the island. That was way back before we built the house and before we moved here. When we first came up here on vacation, you know, and we used to go around the island and you know, enjoy it down the south end. We met him a couple times and talked to him, and that's what he was saying.
Even then.
And so, you know, he was right, and it is spoiled in a lot of ways. There's a lot of state land that you know, that they own, and as long as they keep it, that's one big plus. But, a few years ago, they were having a big zoning thing about, we zoned a whole lot of this harbor area from certain parts, to from residential to commercial to apartments.
Mm.
And this vacant property between us and medical center, a couple lots in there that this guy in Chicago owns, he's a lawyer. And he was, they were going to rezone that to from residential, which is along here, to for apartments, and I think that's what he had in mind. But he couldn't get a septic system very well to do that unless he wanted to run it under the road through somebody's property, across the street, back to property that he owns back on the other side of ways. And we all, you know, just said to this fellow, don't do that, don't do it, don't ever sell it to him, or don't let him do it. And then he was interested in here, but found out that we owned this next door and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And or he could have run it up this way, you know, but no, anyway, they had this one township meeting where they were talking about the zoning, and which I went to, and I, you know, said that I didn't think that they should rezone it, that it was residential, and all the houses were all along here. And there was one fellow, he was the DNR officer at the time, and he was on the zoning board, and he really agreed with me, and he said to everybody, I don't think it should be either. Well, they did leave it, so.
Mm-hmm.
But he, I think, has got something up his sleeve eventually. We tried to buy it from him, he wouldn't sell it.
Money's no object at that point.
No.
But you could see the damage that would be done to the visual environment if high condominiums were put in there, and then the view of the bay would be obstructed.
Right. But people, you know, want to be on the water, and this is ideal. And actually, you know, it could even put something down below, you know, if somebody bought it and wanted to do that. But
you've got enough land.
Mm-hmm. So you just. But then finally, the consensus of opinion seemed to be that most everybody wanted the harbor left the way it was. They had this survey, this company had the whole development around the boat dock and around the rest of the harbor. Like boardwalks and park areas and a whole lot of development. But people didn't go for it, just said they wanted it left this, you know, pretty much the way it was. And one family over on the other side have quite a large area there, a house and several lots. And it's right on the harbor area, but they were all set to put it on the market for a condominium type of thing. We're going to do this. And people were protesting so bad at one meeting we all went to, they just backed out.
Mm.
And they have got it for sale through some real estate company, but not, I don't think, for the type of thing they were going to do. They finally said, if somebody wants to buy it and develop it, okay, but we're not going to do it because they got so much static from everybody. And it might happen sometime, I don't know, but so far it's been about 3-4 years now, and it's been just left in limbo.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, it seems to be dying down. And then this property owners group organized, and after the survey came out, and the people, you know, one young man who is from Lansing that heads it up, you know, have been quite strong in getting their voices heard, so I think that's how.
You're saying that there are quite a few people from the Lansing area that are up here.
Yes, there are some from around Okemos, and
how do you account for that?
I don't know really. Some are from the college, or several that are teachers, that were teachers, some retired, some still teaching. And they, know each other or talk about it, and I guess that way. And same way with Ann Arbor, a lot of them from Ann Arbor that are friends, and I had friends here, and then it just kind of grows.
I know Central Michigan has involvement here on the island, and there's a hospice, elder hospice, that's going to take place in September, I believe, here.
John Cummings coming back. He was retired from the from CMU, from Clark Library, and he was here last year and did an elder hospital, and he's coming back this year. Shirley told me, I'll go, that he's coming back.
I've heard about that in Lansing. It's being promoted there.
Yeah.
At the biological station, I believe, that's to take place.
Yes. I sort of debated about whether I thought I might go. Joel was quite friendly with John at one time, and they came to our house several times, and I think they came to a historical meeting one time and came for dinner or something, came to the house first, and several times, and we visited them in Mount Pleasant, and then he took us to the library and showed us their collection. But after Doyle wrote the book, and the book came out, it just seemed like he never wrote to him and said, even though he didn't like it or didn't approve of it, but he never even wrote a courtesy letter and said anything, about the book. And never any contact or anything. And so Doyle didn't contact him again either. But and when he got the tapes from Yale, the microfilm from Yale, he let John Cummings use it.
Mm-hmm.
And which he did, I think, made copies from that. But I don't know what happened. It was just kind of a funny thing. So we lost contact. But he hasn't been to the island for many, many years until last year when he came up for that. And I understand he's coming back again.
And he's actually running the elder hostel.
Involved in his speaking, I guess. And everybody enjoyed him last year because he does know a lot about strain.
Mm-hmm.
And one year they were having it, and the people who are in charge, I guess it's CMU, that the biological station, actually running it, but then they get the speakers. And they asked Doyle to do a thing on this book and to give a talk, and we were going off the island and going to Lansing. It was the very time that they wanted to have this, and we couldn't change our appointment. It's such a sudden notice, within a couple of days. So he never did do it.
Uh-huh.
But they wanted him to talk about the strain. But John knows an awful lot about him. And some friends of mine attended it last year, and they thought it was very interesting, but they weren't into it didn't know too much about strain, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So they would find it more interesting, probably. So I'm thinking about it. I might go. I think it'd be interesting.
I was considering it, too, when I heard about it. Mm-hmm. I didn't know John was involved.
Uh-huh.
But
I'm pretty sure he is.
It's a week long. If I could get away for a whole week, it would certainly be a treat.
Mm-hmm.
I've never done anything like that.
Sure.
Have you?
No, I haven't, but a friend of mine told me that that's a wonderful possibility of traveling because they're reasonable, and you learn a lot, and that there are many very interesting places, and you meet a lot of very nice people and very interesting people that are doing this.
Rich mix of folk.
Mm-hmm. He said that a friend of his, some women who are widowed, go even on their own. Sometimes they go together, sometimes they just go on their own, and it works out really well. So,
that's good. Here comes Helen. She's back. I'm going to turn this off now. Phyllis, I really appreciate your sharing your memory with us.
I just went on and on.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much. I can.